Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my daily politics podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, April 3rd. Now, McKay Coppins from The Atlantic, who has an article called Social Distancing Culture War Has Begun, on how keeping your 6 feet or not is becoming a political statement, at least for some people and some religious groups. And McKay, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Your article begins at a golf course in the suburbs of Atlanta. Want to tell us that story and what it represents?
Yeah, so I spoke to a guy named Jeff Frost, who is a member of a country club in a kind of affluent suburb of Atlanta. And he told me that a couple weeks ago he was at the golf course, and he said the country club had recently instituted kind of a bunch of new policies to encourage social distancing. So the restaurant was closed, the communal water jugs were gone, and the golfers, people who were at the golf course, were told to limit themselves to one person per cart. Basically, the idea is to keep people spread out, right? What this guy Frost told me is that while he was there at the driving range, the younger kind of Democratic leaners like himself were all very conscientiously following the social distancing guidelines. They were slathering on hand sanitizer. They were keeping 6 feet apart from each other. But there was a group of older Republicans that he had known, some of them for many years. And they, you know, they had their political differences, but had generally gotten along. But what he said was that this group of older Republicans was kind of making a show of gleefully breaking the new rules. So they made a show of shaking hands and were kind of complaining about the hoax that was being propagated by alarmists around the coronavirus. And then he said when their tea times came up, they all kind of piled into golf carts together. Mm. Close
How long
together
ago is this?
This is just last weekend, I guess, or 2 weekends ago now.
Huh. And you point out that social distance warnings are all over Fox News, as well as the other outlets. In fact, I just saw this morning on Fox a story about an upscale community somewhere. I didn't catch the location as it went by fast, and I'm, you know, browsing around trying to inhale as much news as I can in the morning before the show from different sources. But this Fox News story was about an upscale community somewhere that held a high school senior prom, or maybe it's just planning it, despite the warnings. Did you see that one and know if it rings political, or is this an indication, the presence of social distance conversation on Fox, that the political resistance to it is actually pretty fringy at this point?
Yeah, my sense is that it is fairly fringy. I mean, this CBS YouGov had a poll last week that showed that 93% of Americans say that they are social distancing from other people. But if you dig into the data of that poll, there is a 9-point gap between people who identify as Republicans and Democrats. Democrats are 9 percentage points more likely to be social distancing than Republicans. Now, you could look at that data and say, look, like, when is there ever something that 93% of Americans agree on? It's very uncommon. This is a time of national unity. At the same time, that 9-point gap, I think, tells a story that we should be keeping an eye on, which is that, you mentioned Fox News. I've been following the conservative media pretty closely these past few weeks. And I do think now Fox News and most of the conservative media is on board with the idea that this is a serious crisis and we need to address it seriously. But if anything, over the last several weeks, they've been sending pretty mixed signals. And for a while, they were outright saying that this was no worse than the flu, that this was a massive overreaction. They basically have been following the president's lead, and the president has changed his message several times. So the result, I think, is that you have a lot of people who are diehard, loyal Republicans who see this as something, a way to kind of signify their political allegiance, which is to not take social distancing that seriously.
Some of the resistance is coming in conservative religious communities, which you have a lot of experience reporting on. You've been coming on the show for years on your reporting on that. You cite Reverend Jerry Falwell Jr.'s Liberty University in Virginia reopening. And I want to play a clip from Brooklyn. This is former New York State Assemblyman Dov Hyken, who has long represented Orthodox Jewish communities and been seen as a pretty right-wing advocate for them for many years on many things. But here's Dov Hyken this week pleading with pockets of those most Orthodox constituents to please observe social distancing.
But when you go to one of these prayers, when you go to one of these funerals, and then you come home to your wife, then you come home to your children, to your babies, you are endangering their lives. Get it through your head, for God's sake.
So, McKay, when we take the Jerry Falwell conservative Christian in Virginia example and the New York pockets of ultra-Orthodox Jews example, is there a unifying thread of conservative religious theology or culture that resists these public health measures?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I would say that these various conservative religious communities are all distinct and have their own reasons for defying some of these social distancing measures. I do think that one of the things that unites them probably is this general kind of conservative tribalism, right? The idea that that Democrats and liberal experts are trying to infringe on their way of life and especially their ability to worship. That's something they take very sensitively. At the same time, you have seen some conservative religious groups, just out of, I think, an abundance of caution, pragmatism, cancel their worship services. So this shouldn't be political. But, you know, I also, after the story came out, I saw another conservative evangelical pastor actually announced that he was going to hold a Woodstock-like gathering for Easter. Of Christians to defy, kind of in protest of the social distancing measures that are keeping people from their churches. And obviously that's very dangerous, but, you know, I think that clearly a lot of people are looking for opportunities to perform their contrarianism here in a way that's very dangerous.
McKay, is some of this apparent sorting by politics really kind of sorting by geography? The virus spreads through density, so cities, which run Democratic, are getting hit the hardest, and less populated areas just aren't having the same experience to judge the severity on.
I think that's a big factor here. You know, according to a recent analysis of the New York Times, Trump, of the 25 states where people have reduced personal travel in recent weeks the least, Trump won 23 of those states. So you can look at that and see a political story. And I do think there's partly a political story there because the political leaders in those states in many cases were much slower to institute social distancing or mitigation efforts than in some of the blue states. But I also think you're right that I note this in the piece that the most serious outbreaks so far have played out in urban centers on the coast, which are, you know, liberal places. And if you talk to somebody, as I did in, for example, Plano, Texas, he's looking around and his reality, at least in his immediate surroundings, is he doesn't know anybody who's gotten sick. He certainly doesn't know anybody who's died. He thinks that a lot of this is an overreaction and that's how it's playing out for him. Now, I think that you would hope people could look at the news and see what's coming, because the reality is epidemiologists are already raising concerns that once this does migrate to more rural areas, it's going to be really devastating because those are places where the hospitals are further apart. There often are not as many ICU beds, let alone ventilators, as there are in big urban cities. And so it might take a while, it might take longer, but it will eventually reach a lot of those other areas. And so the earlier and the more seriously they can take social distancing measures now, the more they can stave off the outbreaks in their communities.
Chuck in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Thank you, Brian, for your amazing reporting on this effort. So in my neighborhood, I live in a very Spanish, Dominican, African-American neighborhood where social distancing is not part of our culture. And so even when the Yeshiva University kind of blew up a month or two ago, no one really took it seriously. And so we're kind of in this place where we're one of the zip codes that's, like, I guess, the highest, hardest hit. But still, you don't see the impacts in my neighborhood. And one other concern I have is, a month ago or 6 weeks ago, when China was reporting this epidemic really hard, we didn't do anything about it. Now Mitch McConnell's blaming Democrats for trying to impeach the president, because he's blaming Democrats that's why we didn't respond quicker, because of the impeachment trial. So I'm a little hurt about that. And in regards to my people, it's really difficult for us to social distance.
You're speaking to your people, you say?
Yes, sir.
Chuck, thank you very much. About him saying his people, McKay, I mean, this is another question separate from your article on the political culture wars around social distancing to the extent that that exists. But everybody says there are cultures that have physical contact. But we Italians love to hug.
Right.
We Jews love to hug. You know, maybe there are people in the Midwest who don't. I'm just kidding. It's tough.
No, I mean, look, this is difficult. And I do think it's important not to treat this as something that's easy, right? Look, no one, it doesn't matter if you're Republican, Democrat, whatever your background, like, this is a very difficult thing that we're asking of each other, right? And it's the, I think the more that we treat it as just a given, the more that people are likely to kind of reflexively push back on that, right? I would also note that he brings up a good point that, you know, some of the pushback on my article since it was published was that, well, look at all these spring breakers on the beaches in Florida. Are they all Republicans? What about these photos in New York of people who are defying social distancing? Of course, there's a lot of non-political examples, right? And I note in the piece that, like, a lot of people, right, left, center, are defying social distancing guidelines to our collective detriment, but for non-political reasons. What I was highlighting, and I think it's an important dynamic to keep an eye on, is people who are specifically trying to make a political statement by not social distancing. Now, right now, I do think this is relatively a niche phenomenon, but I think that the second that you see the president or the conservative media pivot back toward it's time to reopen the economy, you know, we've been here just a few days ago. Mm-hmm. As soon as we see that pivot happen, I think you could see this phenomenon get a lot larger very fast. And that's why I think it's important to identify it now, and to the extent that we can, examine where it's coming from.
McKay, it's interesting. The conservative news outlet, The Federalist, which you cite, proposes the equivalent of what they call chickenpox parties to strategically spread coronavirus.
Well, I think the Federalist article, for one thing, was probably published in a sort of trolling spirit. You know, a lot of the conservative media and a lot of this phenomenon is kind of to set off their ideological adversaries and make them frustrated. But what this reminded me of, you know, I spoke to a woman in Louisiana who is a self-described libertarian, a devotee of Ayn Rand. And, you know, they've been in a shelter in place for a while. And she's completely against it and, you know, described it as militaristic. But, you know, when you actually probe the ideology behind it, she said, you know, I'm a libertarian. I don't really like being told what to do. And I do think that's the ideological strain that runs through this is, you know, a lot of conservatism, not all of it, but certainly a good chunk of conservatism is just reflexively against any kind of government or community mandate mm-hmm. that would infringe on their lifestyle or the choices they want to make. This is a fundamental philosophical divide between individualism and communitarianism. And I think that probably... Oh, what's driving a lot of this is just a reflexive belief that the government telling them they can't do something deserves a very public and brash response of defiance. And I think
it is an amazing moment when you step back and think, I mean, how much would liberal America, in theory, even weeks or a couple of months ago, have said they would really like the idea of the government enforcing everybody staying in their homes.
Absolutely.
And telling all the businesses, most of the businesses, to shut down.
Ryan, I'm so glad you raised this point, because this is a point I want to make. Like, I'm in the camp that believes that this is a public health crisis that deserves this kind of response. But at the same time, there are serious civil liberties concerns here that I hope that we don't just let pass by. I hope we take time to revisit, digest, debate them when we're past this. And even right now, I think it's you know, not very hard to envision how future government leaders might try to seize the precedents being set right now for less than well-intentioned purposes in the future. Yes. And I think that we need to be openly talking about that, because you're right. I mean, these lockdowns, these community lockdowns, are really, really extraordinary, serious measures, and we should not normalize them.
And I think we're seeing it in some countries. I know people are already complaining about, as they see it, Attorney General William Barr using the moment to restrict habeas corpus rights. Mm-hmm. So these conversations are definitely beginning. Joseph in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's really great. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Thank you so much for calling in.
Perfect. So I live in Great Neck. I'm an Orthodox Jew. I have a lot of family in Far Rockaway, a lot of friends in Brooklyn, a lot of friends in Lakewood. And I want to make the record clear that on March 10th, we had a big, you know, we have a holiday called Purim. And a lot of people get together. And we canceled all of our parties. And on March 11th, my kids' schools, all my kids who go to yeshiva, they all closed. All the yeshivas in Far Rockaway and Great Neck closed by March 11th. Because we're pro-life. Now, there are certain pockets of the Orthodox community that aren't necessarily falling in line with the requirements, and there's pockets in every community. I think when Dov Hykens was talking to those pockets, he was talking to maybe 5 or 10% of the community, and that's very high, and we recognize that that's a problem. But our main concern is protecting life. I've had my kids home for 3 weeks now, and I haven't seen a person in about, I haven't gone to synagogue or seen anybody in about 3 weeks. As well. And I can say that for myself, and I can say that for most of my community. So I just want to say one more thing. My sister who lives in Israel, who's also Orthodox, she also hasn't left the house in 3 weeks. And I think that accounts for about 90% of the Orthodox Jews in Israel as well. Again, you're right. There are pockets that, you know, need to be addressed. But I just want to set the record straight for listeners that most of us have not gone to synagogue, have not joined for prayers in houses at all or anything for about 3 weeks now. So we're really, really abiding, yes. and we hope everybody stays safe.
And Joseph, we completely agree, and I hope I was clear enough in the setup. I was trying to be that the large majority of Orthodox Jews certainly are social distancing, and it is just pockets, but those pockets are concerning. I know somebody from one of those communities who is so concerned because he's seeing the disease spread among friends and family, and the pockets are real, but also I'm sure your statistic is about right, 95% or something like that. So please, everybody else, don't stereotype people wearing yarmulkes or otherwise looking to you like Orthodox Jews and thinking, oh, you're not social distancing, because it is just small pockets. Joseph, what would you say, in case any of the resistors are listening, since the practice is that to have a legitimate religious service, you need a minyan, which is a group of 10 men gathered together. What would you say to people who think that God intended that they have to face this risk in order to be legitimately observant?
I think that, see, that's a hard question, because the answer to it is very subjective to the individual. And I think different individuals are resisting for different reasons. I think the pockets that are resisting, some of them are resisting because of lack of awareness, because of they don't have the technology, some of them, and the awareness to know really what's going on. Some really right wingers aren't listening to the news. They're not listening to this show. So for them, there's nothing really to say because they're not going to hear it anyways. And that's not necessarily to their fault or detriment. It just is what it is. And some of them, again, we're talking about maybe 2 or 3%, like you could find in any community, they have their heads in the clouds. And if that's the case, there's nothing to say to them either. So it's just something that we as a community have to deal with, continue pushing as a community towards our friends and neighbors. Again, that 5% or whatever it is, and try to educate and make them aware to the greatest degree possible.
Joseph, we really appreciate your call. Thank you very much. So last question, McKay. Do you see Trump trying to use this to his political advantage for his reelection campaign in this way? At his briefings, he alternately expresses sympathy for the blue epicenters like New York and blames them for their fate in various ways, not being ready when they could have been ready, etc. Since his election strategy is generally to maximize the turnout of his aggrieved base Is he politically quarantining New York and California as a strategy to get votes in the Midwest, in your opinion, as that area is less hard hit? Or is that too cynical?
Well, I think that there are real public health reasons to try to quarantine the places where there are major outbreaks.
I mean politically quarantine. Yes, I agree. Yeah. So, politically quarantine with rhetoric.
Sure. I think politically speaking, there is little question. It's already happening in the conservative media. And it's even happened with the president that he will be looking for scapegoats for this. I mean, look, this is by any measure a catastrophe, right? Thousands of people have already died in the United States. By all accounts, thousands more will die. You can't blame that entirely on any one political leader or a president, but I think it's pretty clear from, you know, picking up the signals from the president and from his conservative media allies that there will be political scapegoats. He will look for people to blame, and political leaders in Democratic strongholds are obvious targets. And I think that no one should be surprised when that starts happening, especially in a more noisy way as we get closer to the election.
McKay Coppins from The Atlantic, who has an article called "The Social Distancing Culture War Has Begun." McKay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.